In fact, we can look back and see that the Visigoths were using this as a pressuring tactic. They were trying to put maximum pressure on the Roman state to give them a decent accommodation within the Roman system. Now, we may say these were extreme steps. They were. But the point is that we can't assign this to some natural barbarian proclivity to rape, pillage, and plunder. This is not the way these people behaved. It's not how they had behaved in the Balkans. As we'll see in just a second, it's not how they behaved thereafter. Well, eventually, the Visigoths, they seem to have had the idea in mind that if they could find ships, they would cross to North Africa, which was a byword for wealth and luxury in antiquity, plenty of farmers, plenty of fields there for them to farm. But they couldn't really get across to North Africa, so they marched back up out of Italy and took southern Gaul. They took the Riviera. But actually, they settled around Toulouse and continued to request recognition from the Roman authorities. Now, they settle in Gaul in 411, 412. By 418, they finally get a new foedus. They get a new treaty from the Roman authorities. Now, remember, they've had a treaty since 325. They were settled under their king, and they were assigned a series of responsibilities in Gaul. For example, they were to protect the area from brigands. They were to protect southern Gaul from groups of people in northern Spain who had a bad habit of raiding over the Pyrenees. They were expected to protect the western coast of Gaul, what we'd call the western coast of France, against pirates who were often ravaging that territory. In other words, they were assigned a series of formal and specific responsibilities by the Roman authorities. The Visigothic king was, in a sense, enlisted as a military officer within the Roman scheme of things. But let's note what has happened. There is now a kingdom on Roman soil, amidst Roman provinces. A barbarian people were acting on behalf of the Roman authorities, on behalf of the Roman government. But that barbarian people was also largely autonomous. It isn't absolutely clear who was in charge. But let's pose a question. Was that an invasion? Does that look like barbarian invasions of the Roman Empire to you? It looked like that to me. Did Roman policy have as much to do with all of this as anything the Goths did? Is it a kind of an unfolding relationship? Is it two sort of not utterly unfamiliar but not fully familiar parties kind of feeling each other out and trying to form a sense of how they might deal with one another? Now, to carry the situation on, to carry the story on a little bit, let's just look at the unfolding situation in Gaul. That is to say, that part of the Roman world that we would think of as France. I think a quick look at one or two other developments in this area will help to put the Visigothic experience into perspective and to make a little bit clearer the sort of general theme that I'm trying to develop here in this lecture. An allied people called the Burgundians, they leave their name, there's an irony here. The Burgundians then lived in the area around Savoie, that is to say they lived in the area sort of south of Switzerland in the French Alpine Lakes district, not up in northern Burgundy, which is the area of France that today bears the name Burgundy that produces the wonderful wine. So the Burgundians lived in Burgundy, but Burgundy wasn't Burgundy. Now, don't worry about that, but that's how things went. People just aren't always tidy and easy for us. So they're living in the region of Savoie, and they begin to press to the north. The Roman military decides that it wants to keep these people in place. Now, the Roman military commander in Gaul at that time was a man by the name of Aetius. Aetius had grown up among Goths and Huns. He decided to try to use Huns, as well as others, but primarily Huns, as mercenaries against the Burgundians. So now we have a kind of a half-Roman individual who's grown up among barbarians, hiring one group of barbarians as mercenaries to defend Rome against another group of barbarians. Gee, that's all perfectly clear, isn't it? Now, the Huns realized the tenuousness of the Roman position. You know, one of the things the mercenary always realizes is if you got to hire me, I'm probably more powerful than you are. So now the Huns decide, in a certain sense, that they can just start carrying out depredations in Gaul, and there's nothing much to stop them. So Aetius puts together a coalition of Visigoths and Franks. Visigoths and Franks. With the Franks, we'll be much occupied in later lectures. And on the Catalonian fields in 451, Aetius's coalition of Visigoths and Franks, and there's even actually a few Burgundians in the coalition, defeat the Huns. Contemporary sources call Aetius's soldiers Romani, Romans. So you've got Visigoths and Franks and a few Burgundians fighting under the colors of Aetius, himself half a barbarian, to defend the Romans against the Huns.